Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. We're going to be talking about the subject of humility as a leader. And we have as our guest, Marilyn Gist. She has written a book entitled Extraordinary Power of Leader Humility. The foreword of this book is written by Alan Mulally, who is the former CEO of Ford and also was the CEO at Boeing. They have done a lot of work together as they've explored the topic of humility and leadership. She also has a number of interviews she does with top CEOs in her book and have done a lot of research around this topic. She's a scholar, teacher, trainer, and senior leader. She was formerly associate dean and professor of management, the executive director at the Center of Leadership Formation at Seattle University. And then earlier, she was at the University of Washington, where she held the Boeing Endowed Professorship of Business. She has a BA from Howard University, an MBA, and a PhD from the Smith School of Business at the University of Maryland. Looking forward to today's conversation. I know it'll be helpful in as you develop in your leadership. And it's great to have Marilyn joining us from Seattle. And Marilyn, appreciate you taking time out to talk to us.
Sure. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've seen some of your interviews and I've aware of your new book, and we're going to jump into that shortly. But first off, could you give us just a little bit of an overview of your career and your story?
Part of what I have done is to spend a lot of time in higher ed about the last few decades. And prior to that was involved in procurement in both the private sector and the government sector, and got my early management experience that way. And then decided I really had a lot of curiosity about this topic of management and leadership. My work in universities has spanned UNC Chapel Hill, which was my first job as a professor. And then I migrated to University of Washington, and finally as an associate dean at Seattle University. So I have mainly taught executive programs, executive MBA and certificate programs for most of that time. And the real joy for that is working with lots of leaders and seeing both the pain points and the things that work. And that's what led me to really want to study this topic and write the book.
Great. Well, the new book that you have written has come out just recently, and it's a great book. I encourage everybody to pick up a copy. But it's called The Extraordinary Power of Leader Humility, and the subtitle is Thriving Organizations, Great Results. And I saw your interview with Alan Mulally, and who is the former CEO of Ford and Boeing, as well as with Marshall Goldsmith. Great interview. Encourage people to take a look at that. But you talk about, and actually Alan has written the preface of your new book, but talk a little bit about just your thought process as you're writing that book.
Well, I had been fortunate to meet Alan probably about 7 years ago when he was stepping out of Ford and trying to figure out what he was interested in doing next. And I brought him in to work with the programs that I was running at Seattle University, and we just kicked up a great collaboration and friendship over time. And he actually is one of the people that inspired me to really think about this topic of humility. You probably saw in that interview with Marshall that Alan talks about humility, love, and service a lot. Right. And he really models that leadership style. And it was a big part of what helped him turn around Ford Motor Company. I mean, when he took over, that company was losing $17 billion that year. As he put it, that was the forecast, and they delivered on it. So he had a major challenge. And of course, this is a global organization with about 300,000 employees. And his intent was never to walk in and clean house and bring in a new team, but his intent was to really shift the culture in a way that galvanized that large network, not only the employees, but the suppliers and, the dealers and customers. So that everybody rallied around this notion of one Ford, but where he embedded this culture of humility and love and service, if you will. And that just got everybody excited. And it turned it around to where Ford became, first of all, they were the only one of the big three auto companies that didn't take government bailout money. Right. And they later became one of the best companies in the world before he left. So he was a role model, learning more about Alan's story and then thinking of some of the other CEOs I had gotten to know. And I just realized, there's a topic we're not discussing, which is leadership is a relationship. Mm-hmm. And the way in which we relate to people has a lot to do with how much they're going to buy in and give of themselves, or how much they're going to kind of walk through the day giving what they have to and no more.
So if you were to define leader humility, how would you define it?
So, that's an interesting question, because a lot of people misunderstand it and they think of it as a weakness that's not consistent with leadership. But what leader humility really is simply feeling and displaying deep regard for others' dignity. And dignity is about a person's sense of self-worth. So we all have and we all need a sense of self-worth. And nobody's sense of self-worth is more important than anyone else's. So when a leader gets that and has, what I'm using as humility, has this sense of your sense of self-worth is important to me. So in my relationship with you, my interactions with you, I'm going to be sure to not step all over that. And as I support that, trust goes up, employee engagement goes up, initiative, problem solving, all of the stuff that you want goes up fundamentally because the relationship is more healthy.
So we've all worked with people that maybe have expressed the opposite of humility. Yeah. I think some of the role models of leaders that we've seen over the years, some that are, have led their organizations, but maybe don't express that humility. And I think sometimes people want to emulate somebody as a leader, and they take maybe that part of that and say, okay, I need to be that to be successful. Talk a little bit about that and just kind of your...
So I think what we really need to get at this point in both our national life and our corporate life is the ability to distinguish strength from humility, because you can be extremely strong. In fact, Alan Mulally has been described as being a very humble leader who has a spine of titanium. So you don't have to be a mushball in order to have humility. They're very, very different things. You can have high standards, high goals. And I think what people mistake when they look at folks and say, oh, I want to be like that person as a leader, is they see the strength and they want to play into that. They want to really be hard driving and goal oriented. And that's all fine. But it goes back to needing to realize that leaders work with and through other people. They're not individual contributors. And a lot of people who end up in leadership get there because they've been top performers. Mm-hmm. And so they think that their job is simply to drive everybody else in the same way. And that doesn't generally work very well, Mark. So what they have to do as they get to the top is realize I am working with and through a wide range of constituent groups, whether those are employees or vendors or customers, senior management, board members, regulators, environmental activists. I mean, whatever it is, you've got multiple groups and you have a relationship with every single one of them. So the health of that relationship is going to have a lot to do with people wanting to support or resist your direction. It's that simple.
You had a great diagram, and I wish I had it here to share, but I'm sure you can see it in the book. It's the three circles that have on one side meekness and arrogance, and then confidence with humility. And you talk about the sweet spot of leader confidence. And I think, as you said, that sometimes people think, well, I don't want to be meek. I don't want to be a pushover. Right. But where is that balance? And talk a little bit about kind of that idea.
Sure. Sweet spot. Part of the strength that I mentioned is that leaders do need confidence. Leaders do need to understand their strengths and their weaknesses as part of this confidence, and then make sure that they're not straying into arrogance, which involves sort of a boastfulness or condescension, you know, thinking you're better than other people. But you also, as you mentioned, don't want to be meek, don't want to be too hesitant or lacking in confidence, willing to make the tough calls.
So how does somebody practice? You know, I think we all have natural bents, personalities and ways that we express ourselves. But how does somebody practice being that practicing humility as a leader?
Part of it is recognizing that other people are watching us at all times and that they hear what we say, watch what we do. And they're looking at three things. They're looking at who are you, where are you going, and do you see me? And within each of those buckets or three questions are behaviors that leaders can monitor. So the way a leader answers the who I am is about what kind of ego balance do I have? And this is what we were just saying in terms of arrogance or confidence or meekness. You want to be balanced in the confidence, but not stray one way or the other. And it's also about your integrity. You know, can I trust you? Is your word good? Do you walk the talk? Do you deliver on what you promise? So that robust integrity helps leaders display that respect for others' dignity. And then, you know, it's about the direction they set. Do they set a compelling vision and back it up with ethical strategies? And then importantly, in terms of how I treat you, is your capacity to interact with me showing generous inclusion or not? And we hear a lot of inclusion in this context of diversity, equity, and inclusion. But I mean it much more broadly than that. I'm talking about how much someone involves all of their stakeholder groups when you're starting processes or making decisions that are going to have an impact on others. So you need to draw that boundary broadly so that all of your stakeholders are considered on the inside and not the outside of the work that you're doing. So generous inclusion is part of it. And then finally, developmental focus, looking at your employees and your customers for the long term. What are their long-term interests? And how can I, in the course of my day in and day out interactions, make at least some effort to try to support that?
Yeah, I think as mentioned, that some of our viewers are first-time CEOs or they're people that are kind of in that first leadership position. And I think that's a great framework to think about as you show up in a new role, that you should be thinking about each of those and kind of how you're coming across. So developing that culture, and I know you've talked about Alan, his ability to do that. Ford, he came in, it wasn't a group that was working well together. How do you develop that culture of humility in an organization that maybe isn't something that is prized or people look at as valuable?
Well, it starts at the top, obviously, with the CEO's behavior. It's hard to have a culture that embraces that if the CEO is going in the opposite direction, right, himself or herself. And one of the things that I did in the book was to interview a dozen CEOs, Alan being one of them, but many others of highly successful companies. These were mostly large companies because I wanted big brands so people would realize that this isn't a backwater concept. It sure really works, and it works in the major leagues. But one of the people I'll describe, you know, in terms of your question is, say, Jim Senegal and Costco, and he's co-founder and was CEO for many decades of Costco, which became this global company with many, many wholesale warehouses, and they got there without advertising. They don't advertise. They get press. And the positive press helps carry them. But mostly what Jim said is, if you deliver value for the customer and you treat your employees well, you'll get it. And when I interviewed him, I asked him about this culture thing. And one of his comments was, we try to create a jerk-free culture. And in terms of hiring, I asked him, well, is humility something that you look for when you're hiring leaders or making promotions, and they lean toward promoting from within? And he said, yes, we do. And of course, occasionally we've made mistakes. It's very hard to teach people skills. So you try to select for that. And when we've made mistakes, you try to give the person the coaching and support they need to turn it around. But if after 2-3 tries, it's not working, you need to remove them from a position where they're continuing to hurt people, harm people. So I think part of how you build the culture is recognize just how important this is, and you have to model it yourself as a CEO, but you also can't tolerate leaders directly under you who, you know, what many companies do is say, well, we know so-and-so's a jerk, but, you know, he or she delivers, right? Well, that just sends a signal to the whole organization that that kind of behavior is okay. And you'll get other people who emulate it and people who know that, well, if you say something like our employees are our greatest assets, but you've got this person over here who's stepping all over people, that you really don't believe it. So it undermines your culture, and it's never going to be one that performs in a top way.
You talked about, you know, not allowing somebody that could negatively impact as far as your culture. And I'm sure that's a conversation that's probably being held in every company. You know, there's some, you know, issues that are there, but how does somebody that's a leader, that you have somebody that maybe is acting, you know, that's contrary to what you're trying to accomplish. How have you seen leaders successfully deal with those type of individuals? And, you know, can it be turned around?
Most cases it can be turned around, and we can help with that. I, you know, again, have assessment tools and provide group training related to that. I also like Alan Mulally's approach, and he and I have a training program we run together. But his approach is to be very clear about the behavioral expectations. So he has a chart that he uses with his leadership team that has a whole list of expected behaviors, and they begin with employees first, everyone is people first, everyone is included, love them up. And they go on to, you know, let's listen, appreciate, and respect each other, and on and on. And he makes it clear early on that this is the behavior I'm modeling, and I'm accountable for it, and you're accountable for it too. And when people slip, when they don't meet that, you know, he'll have a one-on-one that said, listen, you know, here's what I indicated, and we're really going to do this. And most people turn around. Most people finally get it because he models it. And when they don't, he has that conversation that says, you know, we've talked about this 2 or 3 times and you're still not, you know, you're still not doing it, and I'm requiring it. So what you're doing is making a choice that this is not the kind of environment you want to participate in, correct? And at that point, the person either gets it or they opt out. And he'll, you know, he'll help them understand you're going to be happier somewhere else, and we're going to be happier with you somewhere else. So occasionally you may need to help someone realize that this isn't the right placement. But what I like about Alan's approach is that there's no excuses. There's just simply no exceptions to how we treat people. And that's so important if you want your culture to be healthy.
So other leaders that you think model this, and I know there's other examples in the book of organizations that you've talked to.
Sure. Phyllis Campbell, head of JP Morgan Chase Northwest, well known for having a very humble leadership style, and, you know, previously CEO of a bank, CEO of Seattle Foundation. Sally Jewell, who was former U.S. Department of Interior Secretary. Brad Tilden, who just retired from Alaska. Sorry to see Alaska lose him, but I'm sure there's great succession planning. Mayo Clinic's former CEO, John Noseworthy, and on and on. So there are a lot of leaders who get this style, and there's a lot of research that shows that this is really important. So I imagine you have probably heard of or followed Jim Collins' research from actually a couple decades ago. I think of Collins as the one who first introduced the importance of this notion of leader humility when in his long-term pairing of good companies over a decade to look at which ones became great and which ones just merely, you know, continued at the status quo, he found that the differentiator was really leadership. And within leadership, there were two characteristics of the companies that became great. They had leaders who had what he calls strong resolve, they were driven, and they had high personal humility. So they weren't necessarily charismatic. They weren't the ones seeking the news media. But what they had with the personal humility, which you know we've later sort of studied and understood to be this respect for others' dignity, they had the ability to create a really wholesome culture. And because leading is a relationship, it's the culture and the people who really lifted the organization up. So that's what every leader needs. You know, I've come to talk about it in terms of partnership. Everyone you're working with, your employees, your division heads, your vendors are really partners. And they can be what I think of as shell partners. You know, you pick up a shell on the beach and the creature isn't in there anymore, but it looks like, you know, a snail or whatever it is. But, you know, it's not fully functional. And a lot of times we're looking at people who are occupying a seat in the organization or at the conference table, but they're not all there. They're just smiling and looking at us. And what you want to do is turn those shell partners who are not giving you the best into real partners who share your goals and do everything that you're trying to accomplish because they're just as passionate about it as you are. And leader humility is really the secret to how to do that.
So, and I heard you talk about this with Alan and Marshall, that it's not, you know, sometimes people say, well, okay, humility, what difference does it make? You know, does it really have an impact as far as on our business? And there's definitely research that shows yes. that organizations that have this type of leadership are more successful and yes. and do better.
Yes, all the financial metrics.
Well, talk about, and I know, again, I want to encourage everybody to pick up a copy of your book, but I know you're a learner and you continue to learn in your career. Any other books that you recommend to leaders that you recommend on a regular basis?
On a regular basis, there are many that I like, and it just basically depends on what the focus is, whether it's strategy or whether it's interactions. I like Susan Fowler's work on motivation. I think, what works and what doesn't is really well laid out in her books. I also like some of Simon Sinek's books. It Starts With Why, when you think about what it is you're trying to do and how you get other people engaged rather than telling them things like, well, we need to improve our bottom line. We need to improve our quarter's financial performance. It's really starting with the why. And I think Sinek does a great job of articulating that. So those are a couple of my favorites. But, you know, obviously, Mark, there are many people who've written in this arena and quite a bit that's strong.
Great. So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge when you're not doing interviews and writing?
I walk a lot. And out here in Seattle, which is cool and gray through most of the spring, we're blessed to have a couple of 75 degree days with the sun blaring out there. So I will be heading out in a while to, you know, log some miles and try to get up out of the Zoom seat.
Right. So how would somebody learn more about your work and what you learn more about you?
Well, I'm active on social. I post regularly, particularly on LinkedIn, and would invite all of your audience to connect with me there. I'm also on Twitter, and both places it's marilyngist.phd. I try to stay consistent with that. I'd love to have you go to my website and sign up for my community. It's no charge for that, but I do send out blog posts on a range of topics. And the website is just www.marilyngist.com. Love to have you be part of that community too.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Marilyn. This has been a lot of fun and very important work. And I think encourage every leader to pick up a copy of your book and apply it. You know, I think it's one thing to read it, but also to apply it in your leadership, and definitely appreciate your insights.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.